another Savvy Selling Podcast, where you can learn savvy new ideas on how to sell more and connect more from sales experts around the world. I'm your host, Michelle Nichols, the Savvy Selling Columnist here at BusinessWeek.com. Last week, our guest was Mr. Jeb Blunt on applying the power of action to selling. You can download it from BusinessWeek.com. And next week, our guests are Jim Fowler and Scott Allen on how to use Jigsaw and LinkedIn to sell more. Please come back and listen. Today, our guest is Mr. Mark Freeman, author of Renegotiate with Integrity. It's not business, it's personal. Besides owning and running several companies, Mark has renegotiated a lot of telecommunications and real estate contracts. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me, Michelle.
You're welcome. We all understand negotiating with integrity, but renegotiating with integrity? That seems contradictory. Talk to us about the ethics of renegotiating.
The first thing is that's very important, that's critical about renegotiating, is that our behavior counts. Our behavior is significant. When we negotiate, it's significant, but when we renegotiate, it's even more significant. The difference between renegotiating and negotiating is the history. When you have a history with somebody, your approach is different. You approach them differently. Your attitude is different. You have a heads up of what's going on. And you need to deal with that person a little bit differently, especially if something's gone wrong or you're reviewing a relationship or a contract that you've already negotiated.
Okay. So that's the difference between renegotiating and negotiating is history, right?
That's the risk. And the reason why we have to renegotiate is because things change. It's not always that we're reneging on a commitment. Sometimes just things change. And in today's world, where things are going so fast and technologies are changing and services are changing and something comes up that's always better, we often find ourselves renegotiating when we don't even want to.
I know one of the things you like to talk about is the fact that as often as it sounds like we negotiate, we actually renegotiate even more often. Talk to us about that.
Well, we negotiate a contract once, but we can renegotiate a contract many, many times. We renegotiate relationships all the time. Because there's a history, once we have a history with somebody, we're constantly renegotiating with them. That's why I always say our behavior counts.
Mark, I know one of your strong beliefs is it's not business, it's personal. Now, in sales, we usually hear this idea the other way around. Talk to us about what you're thinking when you say it's not business, it's personal.
Have you ever had somebody put their arm around you and say, Michelle, I really like you. You're a nice person. You're my friend. But this isn't personal. This is just business. As they're stealing from you, as they're taking money out of your pocket, or they're taking a deal away from you, this isn't personal. Our reputations are personal to us and should be personal to us. The way we treat somebody is personal to them. So it's always personal. And so I say, behave as if it's personal and react as if it's business. This common used phrase, it's not personal, it's just business, is a mantra for bad behavior.
And you know, that's why I wanted to talk with you today, Mark, because there are lots and lots of books out there on negotiating. I haven't found anything else out there on renegotiating, but when your book was called Renegotiating with Integrity, I thought this is somebody I want to learn more about and bring to my listeners. So thank you for joining us today. In your book, you give five general principles for renegotiating. Let's walk through them one at a time and you can comment. Is that okay?
That's good.
Okay, your first principle is follow the critical path. Can you give us an example and walk us through this idea?
When you enter into a renegotiating, you have to have a goal, as you do when you do any negotiating. You wouldn't travel from Reno, where you are, Michelle, to Iowa, where I am, without a map, knowing how you're going to get there.
Okay.
Same thing with any negotiation or renegotiation. You have to have a goal. So the critical path is that map of how to get from the beginning to a settlement. We start with the common ground. You have to have a common ground. That common ground is as simple as both sides agree that you're going to discuss the issues about renegotiating or negotiating. That's the common ground. It's as simple as that. But it's funny how often it's difficult just to get to that common ground. The second is a plausible solution, some simple solution that how you're going to work this out. You have to work on that in the beginning of what is a solution going to look like. The third is a comfort zone. That's where you usually discuss money or time. And that is, everybody's comfort zone is different, but everybody has to get to a comfort zone in a renegotiation in order to move forward. And the last is a settlement, and that's where you write it down. And it's amazing how things change from your comfort zone and an agreed upon verbally what you agreed on, and when you have to put it in writing and see it in writing, how that changes. So those are the four sort of the four stations of the critical path in order to finish any negotiation and really any renegotiation.
You talk about the orange ball. In fact, there's a picture of someone holding an orange ball on the cover of your book. Explain what you mean by the orange ball.
That's my hand holding the orange ball. And the orange ball I use as an image for knowing who's in control. A lot of times you don't like to think of us being in control, but have you ever gone out to eat with people or to lunch and you said, where do you want to go? And someone says, I don't know. Where do you want to go? I don't know. You pick. No, I picked last time. You pick. You pick. If somebody doesn't take control, you're not going to eat. So we always use the orange ball as an image of who's in control. And the secret of the orange ball is to know who's in control and how to get it back if you lose it.
Is it important that we be in control of the orange ball all the time?
Not all the time. You can give the orange ball to somebody else, let them feel like they're in control, just as long as you can take it back if it's not going in your direction. You have to pay attention to what your goals are and make sure that the direction of the negotiation or renegotiation is going your way. As long as it's going your way, you're in control of the orange ball.
So your point is that you don't need to have control over the orange ball 100% of the time, but you do need to know who has the orange ball 100% of the time, right?
Absolutely.
Because if somebody has the orange ball 100% of the time, I think we would call them a bully or pushy, wouldn't we, Mark?
Yes, we would. We would. And it's not necessary. Sometimes somebody thinks they have the orange ball when they really don't. You could also have the orange ball when the best time and when you have the orange ball the most is when you're quiet. When you're silent, when you're listening. One of the best ways to get the orange ball is to ask questions, continually ask questions, to delve into what are the real issues of the person you're dealing with.
And I noticed in your book, another way you have control of the orange ball is sometimes you take a week to respond to somebody's request, don't you?
You take time. You take time. That's also a matter of silence, of quietness, of taking time to think about how you want to proceed. How do you want to approach the situation?
Or give them time to think about what you already offered, huh?
Right, and to think about what you were offered.
Your third principle says use your refresh button. Now, you know, when we're negotiating, there's a lot of emotions going on. But when we're renegotiating, and it could be as simple as, you know, you say to your spouse, let's go out for dinner tonight. I'll pick up at 6, and something comes up and you need to renegotiate it. So whether it's personal or it's business, renegotiating is really emotional. Mark, how do we hit our refresh button?
We hit our refresh button three ways. There are three techniques to hitting the refresh button. One is to listen. Listening is a learned skill. We don't know how to listen very well. You ask my wife. I'm learning how to listen to her for 33 years. Listening is a learned skill. Listening isn't speaking when somebody's talking, interrupting them. Listening isn't thinking about how you're going to respond and responding right away. Listening is being quiet. Because people are telling you, they have tells, like in poker. You'll notice down in Reno, how they tell you information. And sometimes they have one thing that's coming out of their mouth, and then they're communicating something else with their emotions that they can't really express. You have to listen, and there's an enormous amount of power in that listening. The second technique is just to be nice. Now, listening shows a lot of respect. Also, being nice shows a lot of respect. I look for a word to replace nice because it's such an insipid word, but I don't mean nice by being insipid or syrupy. I mean nice by being courteous, respectful. It's very important to show people respect and their due respect, and everybody deserves respect. And if you're quiet and silent and easy, and I don't not mean not being tough. You can be tough, but you can still be nice. And the third is using humor. Humor is a great, great, breaks down a lot of barriers, but humor is also, you have to use it when it's appropriate.
But you're right. Sometimes just starting out saying, I can't believe I did something so stupid. You're laughing at yourself. It lets them laugh at you. And you say, now let's figure out a way for us to move forward through this. Right, Mark?
Absolutely. And it's also taking responsibility for your actions. We don't take responsibility for our actions often. We don't like to admit that we're wrong. Lawyers tell us never admit you're wrong. You could be sued. So you're always afraid to admit you were wrong. It's very powerful to admit you were wrong. It doesn't mean you have to give up everything. A lot of times they say, listen, I'm wrong. I know I was wrong in the situation, but I can only afford to do it this way.
Your fourth principle was to transcend the details. But I thought agreements were all about details. Talk to us about this idea.
Well, there are details that you need to transcend. You cannot hold on. A lot of times we hold on to little details that are unimportant. And we have to learn how to get beyond those details which are unimportant and get to those details which are important. Sometimes we need to look at the bigger picture, and we get bogged down in details that aren't meaningful. If you list all your goals in a negotiation or renegotiating, sometimes you have all these deal breakers. And if you hang on to all these deal breakers, these attachments, and you really work hard on those, you may miss the real issues, the bigger picture, and those little details that were deal breakers don't become deal breakers at the end. So you really need these little details, let them go, look at the big picture, and then you could always come back to them.
Could a big picture idea be even something like, do I ever want to do business with this person again?
It could be. And also, I have found that there are many situations where two companies or two people just shouldn't do business together. It doesn't mean that either one is bad or dishonest or lacks integrity. It just means that the way they do business are so different that they don't mesh. And so rather than forcing the companies to do business with, or forcing you to do business with a company, or them to do business with you, it's better just to walk away and move on. Renegotiating is about moving on. It's not about win-win. It's about moving on.
I'm sorry. I wanted you to talk some more about this win-win, because we've all had win-win drummed into our heads since we were kindergartners. Talk to us about why I know you don't believe win-win is a strategy we need to work towards.
In renegotiating, you cannot tell me that if you're renegotiating with your landlord because you can't afford the rent and you come to him with respect and say, listen, I know I committed to this lease. My business is bad. I have to change it. And he says, you're a good guy. I want to keep you as a renter. I'm going to reduce your rent until you get back up on your feet. You can't tell me that's a win for the landlord. It's a move on for the landlord, but it's not a win for the landlord. The landlord gets to keep his tenant, but it's insulting to tell the landlord that they won. No company has ever had a mission, unless you're a law firm, to be involved in lawsuits and in contracts that don't work. It's not in their mission statement. In the meantime, companies and corporations around the world are spending millions and millions of dollars and hours of resource to settle these conflicts. So the point is, if a company wants to remain on their mission, they have to learn how to move on. And that's the most important thing. And that's the level of the comfort zone comes in, because on how important is it for you to move on rather than stay involved in a conflict.
So you're saying instead of win-win, my fellow salespeople who stayed up nights thinking, how am I going to make a win-win out of this situation? You're saying if they can just get to move on, that's still success.
That is very much success, because then
okay,
you can move to the next deal, which is profitable for you and your company.
There you go. Okay, your fifth principle is call in the cavalry. What do you mean by that?
I mean, the number one word in this situation is egos. We get our egos involved. We're too attached to the outcome of a situation. We're too emotionally involved. We can't deal with the people involved on the other side. Bring in somebody who is objective, who can tell us the truth, and this is why I have a job, who can look at the thing objectively and tell us how to move on from this situation. We can't always do it ourselves. We're not always the best person to negotiate for ourselves. I know I'm not. I know I don't negotiate very well for myself. So I'm sure that we all have this issue. So you bring in somebody who can come in and look at the situation objectively, and even try to tell my own client that they're off base, that they didn't behave properly, that they treated this person badly or this company badly, and they are going to have to pay for that. So a lot of times companies want a certain thing in a renegotiation and then realize that, wow, it was their fault. So that's why we call in somebody else to do our bidding. When they're doing the bidding, they can say, okay, I can't make the decision. I have to go back and discuss it with my client. It gives you time to look at the situation and see how you want to respond to their issues.
So you're not responding right on the spot, right?
You're not responding right on the spot. You don't do anything impulsive, which
Thank
gets
you.
People into trouble all the time.
Thank you, Mark Freeman. Folks, you know I don't often plug a book, but I think everyone should read one book a year on negotiating. And for this year, I recommend Mark's book, Renegotiate with Integrity. You can buy it at his website or on Amazon.com. And his website is therenegotiator.com. Let me spell it, www.therenegotiator.com. Again, I'm your host, Michelle Nichols, the Savvy Selling Columnist here at BusinessWeek.com. And next week, we'll hear from Jim Fowler and Scott Allen on how to use Jigsaw and LinkedIn to sell more. Please come back and listen. But until then, get out there and sell something.